As artificial intelligence technology advances, large language models, also known as LLMs, have become essential tools in various fields. These models, like OpenAI's GPT-4, have transformed the way we interact with technology, providing a foundation for chatbots, content generation, and more. However, the broad scope of these general-purpose LLMs may not always suit the specific needs of each industry, and that is where a verticalization comes into play. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Analytics Insight podcast, where we talk about the ever-evolving tech space, and I'm your host, Priya Dayalani. Now, LLMs have the capability to transform text-based tasks across various and different fields. However, the general purpose content or, you know, nature often lacks the depth required for specialized industry tasks. This is where verticalized models step in to fill the gap, and they provide a precise language processing tailored to specific sectors. Now, to talk more about the verticalization, let's welcome Sunisha Nikolish, Director, Asia Pacific, High Performance Computing, CSP, and Artificial Intelligence at Lenovo, to learn more about verticalized LLMs, its significance, and probably why and what's the next wave in artificial intelligence. Hi, Sunisha, how are you doing?
Priya, hi, how are you? That's the best pronunciation of my name I'm going to say all day. I'd like to welcome all the listeners as well. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Sunisha. And I'm really happy and glad that, you know, I'm pronouncing your name properly and correctly. Yeah, but anyways, thank you so much. And, you know, it's a pleasure to have you with us on a podcast today. And, you know, like I mentioned, I think verticalized LLMs is pretty a new topic for me too. You know, I've probably, it's a new concept for me, and I'm glad that we'll be discussing about this in a podcast today. But, you know, like before we get deeper into this aspect, we would like to know more about yourself and, you know, how has the journey been till date? You know, what's your role and contribution towards the company? And also like a more a short brief about Lenovo. I'm sure our listeners know about Lenovo, but again, if you could just help us understand the company's specialization from your viewpoint, it would be great.
Sure. Look, as you say, I think everyone knows who Lenovo is, but they might initially just think it's a, you know, ThinkPad PC company, but it's way more than that. We've been running a very heavy x86 business focused on HPC for 10, nearly 12 years. In fact, we are, as ISG, which is a shortened from for Infrastructure Solutions Group as Asia Pacific, the number one hardware supplier on the top 500 list of supercomputers in the world. So the 500 largest systems in the world, Lenovo has over a third of those systems, way above any of our competitors. So we are an absolute industry leader as it comes to high-performance computing, as well as, I will say, I'm going to use the term, I'm sorry for everyone on the call, but normal IT, right? Because there's a difference between IT and high-performance computing. And then this whole massive explosion in AI, because of our position in HPC, it allowed us to be able to leap into that segment, leap into this thing, boots and all, very, very quickly, pivot a lot of our business, a lot of our technology into AI, and drive that across all the different layers that we have across Lenovo. So I mentioned initially, we have, you know, a PC group. We pivoted there for AI PCs. We have a services group, SSG, our services group. Our services group pivoted incredibly quickly into developing, as well as delivering a technology, delivery model called TruScale, which is an as-a-service model. So that's Lenovo, and particularly the ISG piece, which is the technology portion of that where we go into the data center. So that's Lenovo. When you look at myself, Sunisha's role, if you want to call it that, I'm responsible for establishing the strategy, route to market, and client interaction across high-performance computing, our AI business, as well as our CSP or cloud service provider business across AP. I've been in this industry for nearly 37 years, specialized in HPC for now nearly two decades, believe it or not. I've been around for a while and met incredible number of clients. So the one thing that one of many things that I love about Lenovo is just that client piece. The way we're so client centric and so focused on the client, it does actually fill my heart with joy when I know I have a large company of Lenovo's stature with that type of attitude towards our clients. It's fantastic. But anyway, I go on too much.
No, not at all. Thank you so much, Shanisha. I think that was an insightful overview about the company and, of course, your role within it. And it's really fascinating to hear about the kind of work you do and the impact your contributions have on driving the organization, the overall organization forward. In the initial discussion, I spoke about verticalization of LLM. So this is just for listeners that this process is of customizing large language models for specific industries. Now, instead of creating a one-size-fits-all model, verticalized LLMs are trained with industry-specific data, jargon, and even scenarios. So this customization allows these models to perform even better in specialized tasks compared to generalized LLMs. So we want to understand from you, Shanisha, that what exactly is the significance of verticalized LLMs and why should we consider it as the next wave of innovation?
Well, look, I think you explained it well, but let me explain it in real simple terms to people, right? We deal with applications every day, right? We deal with ISVs, independent software vendors. We deal with use cases. We deal, all of us that are listening on this call, do that on a daily basis. And we all know that when we get into specialization, subject matter areas, that specialization is what sets that application or that individual apart from others, right? So that's effectively what happens here, what's happening here when we see this verticalization of large language models or LLMs in this space. It is effectively deriving, I'm going to say, relevance to the specific sector and precision. So how precise you can get data, how precise you can actually address processes, amongst other things, in that specific vertical, whether it's a healthcare, finance, legal, et cetera. So precision, relevance becomes incredibly important when we, you know, when we start talking and start engaging here on verticalization. What it also, allows is really, it's addressing, believe it or not, some limitations in general AI. So you have a generalist AI model. The amount of training and iterative training that one needs to do here on these generic, I might just call them a generic AI model, it just lacks some level of explainability, lacks a level of context-specific knowledge. So being able to build a very verticalized, industry-specific large language model allows you, again, in the summary, to be able to be laser-focused as opposed to shotgun in your approach to very specific AI models. It drives a level of efficiency as well. So the amount of time to fine-tune these models reduces somewhat. You know, you're not fine-tuning a general model. You're minimizing resources required because you're not doing a $100 billion parameter model. Instead, you're going to be doing it might be a 100 million or 115 or 100 or 200 million parameter model. So you're utilizing less resources, less infrastructure, as if you may say, to be able to train that model. And again, it's all about building precision, building skill, building efficiency into those models, and then ultimately into the decision-making process within that industry and that business that's within that industry. I mean, if you sort of look at it, Gartner themselves, they predict roughly about 80% of generative AI-enabled applications will be focused very much on vertical use cases. So it's really a signal of this shift. And we'll see this occur over the next year and a half, you know, the next 18 to 24 months. You're going to see this shift occur. And it's happening as we speak.
Right. And I think that's a very fascinating perspective that you shared, especially how these verticalized LLMs have the potential to tackle some domain-specific challenges more effectively. And of course, you want more precision and efficiency, like you mentioned. So it really underscores the shift from general purpose solutions to more tailored and high impact applications and use cases. Moving ahead, I think when you talk about artificial intelligence, you know, while previous iterations of AI focus on making predictions or generating content, we are now witnessing the emergence of something far more sophisticated, which is AI agents that can independently perform complex tasks and make decisions. Now, this third wave of AI, which is also known as agentic AI, it represents a fundamental shift in how we think about and interact with artificial intelligence, whether it's a workplace or, you know, different verticals of the business. So how would you define, you know, agentic AI, and what kind of makes it a game changer for personalization?
Well, look, agentic AI can take a level of initiative, if you want to call it that. It can set goals and it will learn from its experiences. Like, it will self-learn from its experiences, unlike generative AI, where you have to remodel and tune, et cetera. So it's effectively, I guess you want to call it autonomous, or the belief that it will become autonomous over time. So goal-oriented, building some level of problem solving. So traditional AI models, that you want to call it today, generative AI models, they're reactive. Maybe I want to use that as a term. They react to input through visual CCTV cameras, through something. There's a reaction associated with it. Agentic AI, as I said before, will take some level of initiative on what it's doing. So you don't have to actually program an action. It may actually take that action itself because it's learned. Or it's learning constantly, if you want to learn, if you want to use the term, it's learning on the job, and it's adapting to the needs of the user relatively dynamically. It is, I don't know, it's the next sort of step, I guess I want to call it, it's the next step in the cognitive journey of AI. And it's not a frightening one. Everyone's going to be going, oh my goodness, this is going to be all about, you know, building autonomous robots that are going to destroy the world. It's not, right? There are still all sorts of swim lanes that have to be built around these things. But, you know, ultimately, it's that next step that needs to happen. If you want AI and need AI to be more than just a bot of some description, or a translator, or a reader of millions of pages of data, right? If you want something that's really going to help humanity to be next to me or next to you on your life's journey to actually help to reduce a lot of the things that you have to do that you don't really want to do, then agentic AI is what's going to take the next level and the next, I guess, the next joy out of the AI sector.
Right. I'm really intrigued to learn more about the agentic AI and how it's redefining personalization by offering like more dynamic and context aware experiences. But again, I think we understand that AI is a very powerful tool for businesses, and it can help organizations make better decisions and increase productivity in many different ways. Like from automating repetitive tasks to analyzing data sets, I think there are no limits. And like we mentioned, like agentic AI being like the third wave of revolution in the artificial intelligence, I think it's very important that how we are deploying AI models and systems. Now, there are many discussions these days about AI and the impact it will have on businesses. And many people are wondering whether they should invest in AI software? And if so, which type of AI software is right for them? I think that's probably one of the reasons why we see the success rates of AI projects kind of declining. But what makes AI specific infrastructure different from the traditional IT setups? And you know, if you could also help us explain what are certain factors that probably organization can consider when they're trying to create an AI specific infrastructure in their respective domains.
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, as we were talking, I guess in my opening, I was talking about, generic or general purpose IT versus HPC as an example. And when we talk about AI, you're talking about ultra high performance computing systems, right? I mean, the reason we are where we are today at a global level is, I guess, the commoditization of GPUs, which are high performance floating point silicon, if you want to call it that, or chips, if you want to call it that, a GPU, that can actually do very iterative, fast, and lots of calculations in a floating point world constantly. And that commoditization has allowed us to drive into this AI landscape. So if you sort of think about the difference between a general purpose IT, which will be just, CPUs, memory, some storage, network. When you look at AI, it is still those CPUs as an example. You still have a computer, but what's attached to that computer is this high performance GPU. Now, that's okay when you live in one machine, but when you start doing large language models, you start basically networking multiples of these machines together. Thousands and thousands of GPUs are networked together and they need to communicate together. So it's purpose built. There's not one machine on the planet in terms of design that's effectively identical to the other. Some have different memories, some have different network constraints or design. The I/O, the data storage, or as we call data management, the data management side becomes complex. So all of these are very specifically architected to be able to handle these very high computational demands and massive flow of data from one computer to another in the same network and then out to the data storage field again, right? So that's number one. You have these specialty hardware that I spoke about, which are these GPUs and these TPUs or maybe accelerators, which can be anything from ASICs to FPGAs to these GPUs themselves. We also, when we architect and we design, you have this thing called scale up and scale out. Scale up and scale out are two very, very different things. So scaling AI infrastructure is effectively scaling out because you're going outside of the one unit or the one box. You keep adding and adding and adding in the design. So as you do that, latency, so slowness or speed of the network becomes incredibly important. So how we design, how many hops, how many leaps within a specific network, I mean, all of these things become important. So we focus on scalability. And then you've got this software layer that lives on top of this because hardware is just one piece. When you look at Lenovo, we have management layers, we have security layers, we have security in our network firmware, we have security on our planar assemblies and our motherboards, we have security that goes to the data storage network and then out. So all of these pieces of firmware and software are there, number one, to protect. Number two, to manage, to orchestrate. Where do you put the data? How do you orchestrate tasks on the machine? How do you manage a machine that is 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 nodes or computers large? How do you manage that so that it becomes a seamless infrastructure for you as a business, as an example? So that's sort of what we do. And all of these things become incredibly critical in the design, the implementation, and the ongoing running of these facilities. And when you think about that as well, you start talking about mass quantities of these particular GPUs, and the next generation of GPUs are running and will be running at about 11 or 12, maybe even 1300 watts per GPU. And, you know, you can have thousands of these things in a machine room. You imagine the heat. So what power you consume is the heat output as well, right? And so you have to keep these things cool. Power is not cheap anymore. So we have a technology called Neptune that we have been running for the better part of 12 years. And it's a direct water-cooled or warm water-cooled infrastructure that allows you to cool memory, processor, network, GPUs, as well as even power supplies on 100% water-cooled systems to be able to reduce total cost of ownership for a client and remove latent heat out of systems. That allows you as a user or a data center provider to install these things to be sustainable, to be power efficient, and to run ineffective clean and silent rooms. So all of these things come into play when we look and we work very in depth with our clients on how we build some of this architecture. I mean, I haven't even started on storage yet, because that's the next thing, right? Or the current thing that everyone's sort of worried about, because data lives somewhere. You're not crunching nothing, you're crunching something. So data lives on IO somewhere. And again, when we architect our systems, we have to take all of that into consideration as well.
Great. I think that was a great explanation. And thank you for helping our listeners and as well as me understand more about, how it's important to have an AI-specific infrastructure and what are certain things that we could, of course, keep in mind. And, it's important that organizations balance the need for these high-performance infrastructure with consideration like scalability, like you mentioned, and even cost efficiency moving ahead. On the other hand, we all know or have used personal assistants like Siri and Alexa, and they have been designed with advanced algorithms, mm-hmm. and they are being used in healthcare, finance, marketing. So I think overall, undeniably, I think AI is reshaping industry at a very rapid pace. But with any emerging technology, it's important not to get swept away without asking some really difficult questions. And of course, like as AI becomes more deeply embedded in the structure of the overall society, we must also consider concerns around privacy, accountability, and fairness. So I just want to put it out simply, can the use of AI be ethical? I think that's a very mainstream and a common question that probably you must have come across and a lot of people must be asking you. And again, here I'm asking you that, why do you think, is ethical scrutiny becoming a key factor with AI investment decisions?
Well, I think, that is actually a very, very good question. And we're seeing this, this ethics, compliance, governance. Lenovo did a survey a little while ago, and we're just in the process of redoing it now again, because surveys are okay, they're a point in time, but I think repeating surveys after 12 months or so to see where the dynamics and where thoughts have moved within a CIO community becomes more powerful, right, as we go forward. So in the last survey that we run, this sort of compliance and governance was incredibly high on the list of, I'm going to say, out of the 300 plus or so CIOs that we surveyed, over 80 plus percent of them were really talking about trust, compliance, how do I trust the model, all of those sorts of things. So that sort of leads you into what I mentioned before. I used the term swim lanes or guardrails. So these sorts of guardrails, I guess, if you want to talk it, is really about mitigating some level of risk to be able to trust the output, being able to trust the AI model and what it's doing. So this sort of level of, I guess, if you want to call it data transparency, result transparency, trust transparency becomes one of the most important things to do. And, you know, as we look around the world, and this is a somewhat of a global statement, this risk mitigation, regulatory compliance, all boils down to ethical AI. And what we're seeing, both from, you know, a sovereign perspective, as well as a corporate perspective, is, I guess, this level of governance and ethics criteria being put forward. I'm not going to say law from a sovereign perspective. So how critical is the data? How have we checked bias within result or within the data going in? Because there is bias just by whoever does the data analysis, as an example. So how does one minimize levels of bias, right? When you look at AI from a business perspective, there is a direct competitive advantage to businesses who are implementing AI. And if you look across the next 24 months, 36 months even, you know, 80, 90% of businesses out there will have some form of AI. So having ethical AI will be even more of a competitive advantage going forward, I believe, because it will allow, you know, shareholders, users of that business infrastructure or what they manufacture, et cetera, to be able to trust in what AI is telling them or the AI use case is telling them or taking action or process action on. I think that becomes a very important facet of value creation for any particular company. Again, these types of governance practices, if you will. So I think that's really where it is. You know, controlling AI from social interaction on social media platforms, that's going to be another one that is currently, you know, in a lot of discussion in a lot of organizations. And I think it's important to be able to distinguish between a system and a human being. So all of those things become ethical, advertisable, and regulatory within both a country as well as a business.
Right. I think I agree with you. And I think you've also highlighted some really crucial points in terms of how ethical AI is essential and why organizations should consider ethical scrutiny and ethical AI, not just in terms of regulatory compliance, but also to maintain public trust and also foster a responsible innovation that way. So, you know, you mentioned about transparency as well, where we have transparency in decision-making and transparency in models as well. So are there any particular approach or some ways or particular steps that you would like to share with us in terms of how businesses can build transparency when deploying AI solutions?
Yeah. I think, look, there are a great number of things when you start talking about governance and transparency, right? Adopting explainable AI, right? Implementing systems like an explainable AI, which will provide a very clear and human readable insight into the decision-making process of that AI infrastructure. Being transparent or publishing the data sources that are using to train the AI models, making sure that they are, at the very minimum, ethical in and of themselves, as well as legal. So do you have rights to that data, as an example? I mean, going out and buying personal data from anywhere, we've heard about some of this data manipulation a number of years ago, I'm going to say pre-AI, during one of these elections. And that was a massive, massive problem. I won't talk about the companies here, but that was a massive problem because that data wasn't actually freely given, right? There was no right to that data, but it was used nonetheless in a whole bunch of different ways. So having legal compliance is incredibly important. Conducting regular, frequent audits to identify and eliminate bias. I mean, that's, you know, I spoke about bias before, and that's bias across both algorithms and the data sets. How the data sets are manipulated, how they're managed and massaged into the appropriate model can form bias. The algorithms themselves that are doing the heavy probability work, they can be biased in and of themselves as well. And again, I don't want to talk about what recently came out because it's just awful levels of bias that's happening at the moment. You as an organization, as a senior leadership team that is looking at AI, you know, developing and enforcing AI ethics frameworks that align to the organization themselves, the values that you have as an organization becomes important. That alignment then matches, right? In any organization, having alignment between different groups is incredibly important, whether it's global supply chain to sales to procurement, you name it. When you add AI into the mix, having them the same alignment becomes even more important. And I think maybe one of the last ones here is really stakeholder engagement. So when you have leaders of business units, senior executives of business units that are going to be utilizing the AI infrastructure or have certain use cases or projects, et cetera, having and involving those stakeholders in the discussions about the AI infrastructure. And when I mean infrastructure, it's not just the hardware, it's the software piece, the data sets, everything else, becomes, again, one of those very important aspects of implementation and setting strategy within an organization. And I think all of those types of things go a long way to building a level of transparency and engagement potential across the business. So many senior executives that I've met over the last 2 years have told me the following words. My competitors have AI. I need to have five AIs. Give me five AIs, right? Not necessarily knowing what those things are. And again, I'm going back a number of years, but not necessarily knowing what those things are and what general impact they're going to have on their internal resources, the people, processes, as well as their client set. They have no idea about it. But those things that I just mentioned might sound very procedural, bureaucratic, but they shouldn't be. And they may sound like that in nature, but they shouldn't be. They should be there to form the core balance that's associated with having what I'm going to say industry and life-changing technology available and implemented in your organization. And this is, you know, altering what these businesses do and what, you know, your staff and your customers do and interact with. It becomes incredibly important to do it that way.
Yeah, very well said. And it's really important when we're talking about transparency, and it's important to understand and focus majorly on the trust, and especially as AI adoption grows across industries. So while we are talking about verticalization of LLMs and also having a more fair and a transparent AI environment across different industries, one last question: what do you think is the future of AI?
Oh, the future of AI. Well, we could. Oh my goodness. I will say this a lot. You know, use cases that you have in AI, and we spoke about verticalization of generative AI, large language models, et cetera, earlier. You know, when you talk about use cases, a use case in and of itself is only limited by imagination. If you can think something, if you can think of doing something, there'll be a use case you can build around it for AI. So when you look at the future of AI, in very simple terms, it is effectively and only limited and will be limited by both imagination and the physics associated with building faster and faster accelerative technologies like GPUs, right? We are seeing now societal impact, right, from AI. We're seeing interaction from humans to computers in a very clear language base, right? When this thing started off, it was typing. Now you can talk, and you can talk freely in any particular accent. We're seeing the interaction back from those systems in multiple languages, hometown-specific languages as well, right? So all very nuanced, if you will. That sort of allows us as, you know, individuals, as an example, to do more than we used to do. So I think we're going to have a faster pace of life across society as a whole going forward. And when I mean faster, we're able to do more in the hour that we have, because we can farm out a lot to AI, and AI will summarize a lot for us as we go further and further down the road. So that's efficiency as individuals, efficiency as business, as industries. All of that will continue. I think in the sort of next iteration of this stuff, I think there's going to be some issues across privacy. I think there will be privacy issues coming up. This is why it's important to go back to what I was talking about before around guardrails. So I think you're going to see some of this occur more often than not over the next sort of 12, 18, 24 months. And you're going to see a complexity increase around regulatory and governments. Again, I spoke about that before. The legalities around crafting AI-specific laws. We already see in some social media aspects, you have to actually stipulate that it is an AI-derived image or individual, right? We see there's a significant business at the moment on the socials for having AI influencers, if you've seen them. And in many ways, they're very, very indistinguishable from a human. It's very, very scary. So you're going to see some business and workforce changes. I think that's absolute. I think you're going to see it. And it's really up to us to be able to upskill and reskill ourselves to take advantage of those changes. And I think, again, you're going to see very, very industry-specific impact. The personalization of education and learning. We have use cases that we've driven here in Lenovo. There's one very specific one in Hong Kong. We implemented a visual AI infrastructure that would help with learning disabilities children. And what this very specific use case did was, if you are talking to a learning challenged child and you're educating, you're teaching them, you're doing that, what you're doing is you're supposed to be taking notes and seeing how they progress as well as teaching them at the same time. Here's a cup, here's a saucer, this is red, this is blue, this is a cat, this is a dog. As you're doing that, this particular use case, whilst as simple as not, will actually track the student's changes over time. Every day, we'll change the students' changes and progression, if you will, in his educational career. But we'll actually take the notes so that the teacher themselves can then focus specifically on that child, which I think is a beautiful thing. So you're going to see more and more of that type of thing. You're also going to see more and more of personalized education, where it will know what your pitfalls are, what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, focus on those things, give you your strengths, more of that, but also start helping you and doing those types of helpful items on some of your weaknesses. You'll see a similar thing, personalized medicine and healthcare. We'll see diagnostic accuracy increase. Incredible amount of work is happening today across cancer. Particularly around tumor segmentation, amongst other things. So that side of the world will increase. I think AI tools across finance. So finance interaction, banking interaction, we already have that a lot today, but it'll be more again, I'm going back to the term personalized. It's going to be very personalized. You're going to see that. AI is going to streamline legal. It's an absolute, I don't want to laugh, but you know, there's obviously the strong potential when you have AI doing grunt work across legal precedents, amongst other things. You're not going to need a lot of that back-end legal work. You're obviously always going to need counselors. You're always going to need KCs, amongst other things, King's Counsels, et cetera, to be directly there in court. But a lot of the back-end work can actually be done today with AI. And obviously, we continue to talk about transportation and autonomous vehicles, amongst other things. We're seeing that in test across Singapore. That's been in test now for a great many number of months. We're seeing those tests running in San Francisco. So autonomous vehicles, I think that will begin to dominate a little bit as we go further forward across the next, you know, number of years, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. You're going to see more and more of this. I'm excited. You couldn't imagine. I think it's going to be one of the best times to be alive for us as human beings. Just imagine, I mean, for me, I look at healthcare as one of those areas where AI will have the biggest humanitarian change. Our ability to do drug discovery, disease work, I mean, all of this, this is when we're going to kill cancer for once and for all, I think. And this is where it's going to be. We're going to use all of the historical data and we're going to drive and drive and drive. And I know this is going to happen. I know it. Dementia, Alzheimer's. I think this is the next half decade to decade where we will eradicate these horrible, disgusting diseases, finally. And you can see I'm passionate about this, but that's where I think it's going. And that's where I want it to go. Priya.
Great. I think that was a fantastic conclusion to our podcast conversation, Sanisha. And I think that was an eye-opening discussion. Thank you so much. And eventually, I think verticalization of LLMs is a game changer for businesses and organizations looking to harness AI for their industry-specific applications. And once, you know, you have that ability to customize these models, I think companies can achieve greater accuracy, improve compliance, and even increase efficiency within the respective fields. But again, as AI is innovating and is being capable enough to solve complex problems, it is like without a robust ethical framework, it can also lead to unintended harm. So as we continue to develop and implement AI systems, the principles of AI ethics must also guide us to ensure that technology works for the benefit of the society as a whole. Well, thank you so much, Sanisha. It was a pleasure having you with us on a podcast today. I think you helped us understand deeply about verticalization and why it's the next wave of innovation in AI, and of course about agentic AI and it's and how organizations can develop more transparent and trust within the stakeholders when we're deploying AI solutions. So thank you so much for your time and effort. It was really great conversing with you.
Thank you, Priya. I really appreciate being on today. I had a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Sanisha.
You're welcome. Take care.
Thank you. So this is for our listeners. Stay tuned for upcoming podcast. You can view all our previous podcasts on Spotify and other leading platforms. Thank you so much.